All right, welcome back to week five. How have you been doing with changing your thoughts and changing your questions to more empowering ones? This can be super powerful, so I hope that you are getting some good practice with it. But this week, we're changing our focus to how to improve our relationships, and specifically our significant relationships with our partners, with our spouses. Oftentimes people are coming to me because their wife or their partner is kind of kicking them in the rear and saying, if you don't change, something drastic needs to happen. Either people's spouses have one foot out the door already, or they're threatening separation or divorce, or sometimes people are just really unhappy in their marriages and in their partnerships, and they know if they don't start to change, if something doesn't start to shift, that they can see the writing on the wall, that the relationship will tank. So this week, we're really gonna dive into this and look very specifically at why this happens and what you can do about it. Now, what we know about successful relationships and what makes good partnership and what ends itself in divorce, a lot of what psychologists know and what researchers know has been done over the last 35 years or so in the research labs by a psychologist and his wife, Dr. John Gottman. And if you haven't heard of him, I highly recommend, if you're interested in more, check out his website and his books. They're really user-friendly. They're super helpful. But I want to tell you a little bit about what the research has been in this arena. So whether it's about couples not having enough sex, or people complaining about things, chores not going the right way at home, there's too much laundry, or there's money conflicts, right? Conflict is inevitable in every marriage. But to understand the difference between happy and unhappy couples, Gottman began doing studies on couples in which some were newlyweds, some had been together for a really long time, all different types of couples, same-sex couples. It really didn't matter the gender or the sexuality. And he would bring them into a lab and ask them to solve conflict in their relationship within 15 minutes. And then he and his research team would watch them, watch the kinds of things that they were saying, watch how people were reacting. Eventually, in other studies, he would hook people up to measure their physiological symptoms, what was happening on the inside with their heart rate, etc. And then he studied what was happening, and then he would follow them over time. And what happened and what he and his research has gathered over many years, and it's been repeated over and over again, so the research and the data definitely hold, is that when he followed up with them years later, he was able to predict what couples would stay together and which ones would divorce with over 90% accuracy. That's an incredible statistic. And it was simple. The difference between happy and unhappy couples is the balance between negative and positive interactions during a conflict in particular. And there's a very specific ratio, which is 5-1. This is what he calls the magic ratio. And this means for every negative interaction during a conflict, a stable and happy relationship has at least 5 or more positive interactions. Now, if you think about that, how many times when you say one kind of negative thing to your partner, do you counteract it with 5? Like, what's the ratio in your relationship, right? And this is what we know. Unhappy couples engage in fewer positive interactions. And if the positive to negative ratio during a conflict is tipped in that five, in that out of balance, in that 5-1 ratio, that's unhealthy, and it indicates, and it's one of the predictors of who ends up in divorce. So we're going to talk about how to deal with that in particular. So if you think about what happens in your household if you're partnered, or if you're not currently partnered, think about what your last relationship was characterized by, or think about what it was like when you were in that last relationship. Imagine, and just really imagine, put yourself back in that scenario or think about what's currently going on and give yourself an honest assessment of how much is coming, how much positive or negative comments are coming out of your mouth. And imagine you're wearing a backpack, right? Every time there's a negative comment, you get five heavy ass rocks put in your backpack, right? And then every time there's a positive comment, you get one of those rocks removed. So if someone says a compliment or something positive, like, hey, you look good today, or hey, you did a good job today, or hey, like, I'm so grateful that you picked up the kids, or you did the dishes, or whatever it is around the house, one of those big heavy rocks can come out. But so if you were really looking at that, how heavy is your backpack right now? How heavy is your partner's backpack? Are you putting rocks into her backpack, or are you taking them out? Right? This is a good chance to get honest with how are you showing up in your relationship? What kind of energy? What kind of words? What are you doing every day? What are you saying or not saying every day in your relationship? We know that this ratio, this 5-to-1 ratio, is one of the main predictors of divorce. What are the others? We're going to talk about that. It's the four horsemen. It's called the four horsemen of the apocalypse. This is something Gottman himself put together. What's the apocalypse? That's when a marriage or a partnership crashes and burns, right? And so after decades of looking at his research, he was able to distill it down to what are the things that end relationships. Another one, withdraw and disengagement. That's when we go on autopilot, when we shut down, when we pull back, when we are just going through the motions, in air quotes there, right? We're withdrawn, we're not really engaging, and it's sort of like, well, whatever, right? That's kind of that attitude. One another predictor of divorce are fights that don't resolve, right? You may have heard or seen interviews, or you've heard that old adage when couples that have been married 65 years will say, we never go to bed angry. Well, there is something to that. Now, there are very strategic ways to handle conflict and anger, because of course anger and conflict is inevitable in any sort of relationship. But fights that, when it's an argument that happens repetitively, it's the same issue over and over, week after week, month after month, something that never gets resolved, that's one of the predictors of divorce. What's another one? Focusing on the negative. There's a quote that says, where your attention goes, your energy flows. I'll say it again. Where your attention goes, your energy flows, right? If we are, and we've talked about flashlight focus before, it's a little bit similar to that. If your flashlight is always on the negative aspects of how unhappy you are in your relationship, what your partner is or isn't doing in the way that you wish that they were, how they're doing something wrong, how they're not giving you what you need, then guess what you're going to continue to see? Those things. All right. What's another predictor of marriages that crash and burn? That fight or flight response that we've talked so much about up until now, right? You've been monitoring your physiology. You've been hopefully practicing relaxation strategies, practicing monitoring your physiological state, right? And in the lab, in some of the studies that Gottman did, when he hooked people up to the biological markers to measure heart rate, breath, what's going on in their skin, right? If their hands are hot or cold, if they're sweating, what's going on in their entire physical system, he found that amped up interactions, you know, in a consistent manner, right? So of course people sometimes get upset and that's normal, but those amped up interactions and when they're repeated, right, that is a marker of a relationship that won't work out, right? If you think about your brain interpreting every time your partner walks in the room, you feel tense, or every time your partner walks in the room, you feel threatened in some way, or like you have to defend yourself, or that you're under attack, or that you see, or your brain interprets your partner as the lion, right? The lion chasing the antelope that we talked about a few weeks ago in that fight or flight response. Then your body responds in that way, and that kind of negative fight or flight reaction, which is the brain signaling danger. I don't like this. This is a threat to me, right? Even if you consciously don't feel that way and your body's interpreting it, right? That's a predictor of divorce. Another thing that predicts divorce that came out of Gottman's research is really amazing and super powerful. And what I love about this one is that it really puts so much power in men's hands. And what Gottman found is in heterosexual relationships, right, it had to do with how men in particular respond to when their wife or girlfriend complains, right? When their wife or girlfriend brings up an issue or brings up a complaint, the way a man responds to that has everything to do with the success of the relationship. So what's cool about that? Well, that means you're in control, right? How you respond can directly influence the success or failure of your relationship. What you do and say has a big influence here, right? And what Gottman said is, if men, when they get these complaints, right, because typically, let's be honest, a lot of the time, it's the women who are bringing issues to the table, right? Hey, honey, we don't really do anything together anymore. This is, of course, not true all the time, and I'm speaking in generalizations. Or, hey, honey, you're always off at work, and I miss you, or you're never around, or I'm doing all this stuff at home and you're at the fire department or you're at work or whatever it is, right? When men can take some responsibility for that and accept, I don't mean agree, I mean accept the influence that the woman is bringing up, right? That has a huge effect on the success or failure of a relationship. Okay, so I mentioned the four horsemen that of the apocalypse, right? And this is a metaphor depicting the end of a relationship, right? The first horseman is criticism, right? This is criticizing your partner by saying something like, you never think about how your behavior is affecting others, or you're so selfish, right? You never think of anybody. You're not never thinking of me. You're only thinking of yourself. That's an example of a criticism, right? And the difference is, and what you want to try to do is, of course, there are things that you're going to need to bring up, right, that need to change, right? But there is a difference between criticizing someone and bringing up a complaint, right? Criticizing is, in essence, attacking someone, attacking their character. And in effect, you're attacking who they are as a human being. Right, when you're bringing up a complaint, right, it might be sound something like, hey, you know, I was feeling really nervous when you were running late and you didn't call me. I was worried about you. I thought we agreed that we would do that for each other. We would let each other know when we're running late. Right? That's a difference, right? You could say you never think about me, right, and you're selfish because you were just off doing whatever you were doing, or you can say, I get really worried about you if I don't hear from you because I thought that's what we agreed upon. Those are two different ways of saying the exact same thing. So the second one, contempt, right? When we are communicating with contempt, this means we might be mocking them with sarcasm, right? We might call them names. We might use things like eye rolling or those big kind of sighs like, oh. Now, contempt is something a little bit even further and worse than criticism. So it's not only a criticism, that's a criticism again, you know, attacking your partner's character. Contempt is kind of like, I'm better than you, right? So for example, you might say something, or maybe your partner said something to you like this, oh, you think you're tired? Have you seen how hard I've worked around here? Did you see that I put 65 hours in last week? Do you see that I mowed the lawn and I took care of the kids and I made dinner and I did the laundry, right? And all you do is you come home and you sit on the couch or you get on your phone, right? That is what contempt sounds like. Research shows that couples who are in that kind of relating pattern with each other are more likely actually to suffer from illnesses. Now, why do you think that is? You should know the answer to this by this point, right? We know that in that state, we're stressed. Our body is stressed. And when we're stressed, we are sick more often, right? Our immune systems are down. So contempt is often this kind of resentment that's been brewing in the background for a long time and feeling like, I'm better than this person, right? And then you kind of go on the attack to show it. The next horseman, which I see so many people engaging in, is defensiveness. And it's typically how we're responding to a criticism. We've all been defensive, right? And this one is usually always present in couples that are having a hard time. We feel unjustly accused, like we've been treated unfairly. We might look for excuses or say something to get our partner to back off, but it's never successful. Our excuses just tell our partner that we're not taking their concerns seriously and that we're not actually taking responsibility for any of our behavior. So here's an example, right? Just say your partner comes to you and says, hey, did you call John and let them know that we're not going to their dinner party like we promised? And then the defensive response could be, hey, you know what? I was busy today. As a matter of fact, you know how busy my schedule was. Do you think I had time to do that? How come you didn't do it? Right? That's a partner who's responding defensively. But reverse blame is an attempt to make the other partner at fault, and it's not successful. Right? Oh, you think I don't work hard? I work hard too. Or, oh, you're going to do that to me? I'm going to do it to you back. Oh, you feel sad? Well, I'm sad too. Oh, you feel stressed? Well, I'm stressed too. Oh, well, you're complaining about that? Well, what about all the things you do, right? Those are all examples of defensiveness, right? Instead, it's possible to say something like, oh, you know, I forgot. Dang it. I should have asked you this morning to do it because I knew my day was going to be packed. That's my fault. I'll call them right now. Right? That's taking responsibility and saying actually why in a non-blaming way, not like I'm busier than you, right? But saying I'm busy, I should have done it, or I should have let you know that I wasn't going to be able to do it, right? Of course, people defend themselves when they're stressed out, when they're feeling attacked, but it never works. If your outcome is to solve a conflict, it never works. The outcome of defensiveness is to win, and winning is not the goal in relationships. It only actually escalates the conflict because the other partner doesn't feel heard or understood. I'm not saying what they're saying, what the other person is saying is right or fair or delivered in kindly, but you have control over how you respond. It doesn't mean you're a doormat either. We're going to talk about that. But defensiveness is really a way of blaming your partner, and it won't allow for the conflict to be managed effectively. The fourth horseman, and one of the most interesting to me because it's something I see a lot, and especially with the men that I work with who are very well-intentioned and engaging in this just because they don't know, right? This is called stonewalling. And this is usually happening when somebody is withdrawing from an interaction. Maybe there's a lot of built up resentment and contempt going on. And this is basically shutting down. Is it simply not responding? It might be not confronting an issue that their partner keeps bringing up. It could be turning away, acting busy, engaging in other behaviors. Basically walking out of the room, or pretending like you don't hear somebody, or kind of maybe you're on the computer or on your phone, or your partner's on the computer or phone and says, like, I'm not busy. I can't talk about that right now. And it takes time for negativity of the other three horsemen to build. And then stonewalling seems to be like the out, right? It's like, I don't know, I'm just not going to say anything. I'm not engaging. They keep bringing up the same issue, whatever, right? That's kind of stonewalling. And then it just becomes a bad habit. And then it's actually really hard to stop. Sometimes why it's happening is people feel overwhelmed in the moment. They might feel stressed or flooded. And we might be in this physiological state of feeling overwhelmed where it's really difficult to talk about things rationally. If you've ever been in an argument or in a disagreement and just kind of shut down and walked away, that's an example of stonewalling. Sometimes when it's agreed upon between partners, that is a great strategy, but you always have to come back around. If you don't come back around, it just makes everything worse, and it starts creating this drift that it can be responsible for the end of a marriage, right? That kind of emotional drift. Marriage typically isn't, they're not typically ending because of, like, you know, volatile fighting and affairs and all that stuff. Typically, marriages are ending because I think it's about 85% of them are ending due to that kind of, we just drifted apart, right? And actually some of the research, other research on marriages show that both partners will say, we just kind of drifted apart. We weren't connected anymore. And stonewalling can be a huge contributor to those. If you ever feel like you're doing this stonewalling behavior during something that's going on, during an interaction, you can stop whatever you guys are saying and ask to take a break. That's the greatest solution. If you know you're overwhelmed, if you know you're gonna say stuff you're gonna regret, if you're feeling like you're gonna blow, right? What you need to do is take responsibility and communicate that instead of just throwing your hands up and walking away. It says, okay, I'm feeling really overwhelmed and angry right now. I don't want to say anything I don't mean. This is important. Can we please take a break and come back in a little bit? Right? That's a much better response than just walking away. And then the other person feels like, well, now, WTF, what are we going to do now? Right? So when you walk away, have a plan of when you're coming back, right? Like, I'm going to go for a walk for 20 minutes. I'm going to go take, you know, play with the dog in the yard. I'm going to go do this chore and then I'll be back, you know, and do something during that time, right? Again, monitor your state, do something that's going to alter your physiology. You do 20 jumping jacks, you go to the gym for a half an hour, you, I don't know, do something outside, read a book, watch a show, watch some funny YouTube videos, anything that will switch your emotional state to stop that feeling of stress or anger or emotional overwhelm. And then you come back when you feel ready, but you should typically have some sort of deal with your partner about, there may be times where I get overwhelmed and I will ask to take a break and then I'll come back around. Okay, so we've talked about these predictors of what makes a relationship go downhill. And I want now for you to take an honest look at what you're doing in your relationship, or if you're not currently in a relationship, what you did in your past relationship to contribute to the destruction of it. Okay, so thinking of, get a piece of paper, get your journal out. This is a time for writing. Do you engage in criticism? We're not talking about what your partner's doing. Do you engage in criticism? Yes or no? If you do, I want you to write criticism down on your piece of paper. Okay. Do you engage in contempt? And contempt, again, is this attacking the sense of self with the intent to insult somebody, right? Criticism is just verbally attacking somebody's personality or character. Contempt is like really attacking who they are with like this intent to insult them, right? Or even abuse them, right? You can get honest with yourself. Sometimes we really want to hurt someone. That's what contempt is, right? So if you engage in contempt, write that down as well, right? If we don't know what you're doing, we can't fix it. So it's really time to get honest. And if you're not sure, think, what would my partner say in this situation? Would they say that I'm attacking them with the intent to insult them? Okay, yes or no. If you think the answer is yes, write contempt down. Next, defensiveness. Defensiveness, again, is kind of warding off a personal attack and reversing the blame. Yeah, well, you, right? Well, last time, and that kind of response, do you engage in defensiveness? Yes or no? If you do, please write the word defensiveness down. And the last one, stonewalling. Do you engage in stonewalling? That's withdrawing to avoid conflict. Separating yourself. All right. Yes or no? What's on your list? Okay. Now let's talk about how we're going to address these things. What are the antidotes to these four horsemen of the apocalypse? All right. So if you have criticism down on your list, that means that you're engaging in criticism, verbally attacking somebody's personality or their character. Here's the antidote. Let's talk about this. The gentle startup. This means when we have something to say, it's not a harsh startup like, what the F? Why didn't you do XYZ? It's a gentle startup. How we start to communicate this. And this is about talking about your feelings using what we call I statements to express a positive need. So this means you're not saying you did something, right, which is indicating blame. You're actually talking about your feelings. And so how do we do this? We say, I feel blank when you did Y, right? People can't argue with how you feel, right? So you have to think about, what is it that I feel, right? And what is it that I need? Like, I felt left out when you ignored me at the party, right? And I need to know that, and my request is that next time when we're at a party, every 15, 20 minutes that you check in with me, right? So I statements go like this. I feel blank when you did blank, and the blank and filling in the blank there has to be a very specific behavior, not when you always are so selfish. I feel disrespected when you're always so selfish is not a good way of having a gentle startup. I feel disrespected when you return 18 phone calls and don't ask me how my day is, right? See how that's a very specific behavior that you're commenting on. And my request is that we have 5 minutes at the end of the day to talk about how our day is before we get on the phone. Or you want to request something very specific, the specific behavior that you would like that person to engage in. I would like you to turn off your phone. My request is that you call me if you're going to be late. Something very specific and behaviorally, so it's very clear. It's important that the antidote starts with I feel and then goes to what your request is respectfully. So there's no blame or criticism, which actually prevents the discussion from escalating into an argument. So if criticism is one of the things you know that you're engaging in your relationship, on your piece of paper right now, and if you need to pause this, that's fine. I want you to write next to criticism, a little arrow or something, and then physically write the sentence. I feel blank, right? Draw a line or leave a space when you do X and my request is X. Right? This is going to be your new mantra. This is what you're going to practice saying over and over again. There's no more criticizing. That's got to stop. All right, so pause if you need to do that to write that down. Otherwise, we're moving on. Okay, the next one is contempt, right? The antidote to contempt is building up the culture in your marriage of appreciation and of respect. You have control over this, right? We can't control what other people do and say, but if you're using these skills, you will be able to begin to turn the culture and the relationship patterns you have around. Okay, so contempt shows up again in statements that come from a position of that kind of, I know better than you, right? That superiority thing, right? Sometimes that comes in the form of sarcasm. I know first responders are really good at being sarcastic and cynical. There can be things like eye rolling, name calling, mocking, kind of that hostile humor, right? And this is really destructive and it defeats the whole purpose. It doesn't get your point across in an effective way. It's the greatest predictor of divorce, and it must be something that is stopped. So how do we do that? You start building a culture of appreciation. And one of the mottos that Gottman teaches is small things often, right? Remember, we were talking about that backpack filled with heavy rocks, right? If you know there's a lot of those heavy rocks, the way to do it is to start little by little taking those rocks out, or at least pieces of those rocks out. This is how we would do it. Regularly expressing appreciation, your thanks for something. Oh man, those noodles were great. I mean, it doesn't have to be big. Or, oh yeah, thanks for parking your car there because I really needed that extra space in the driveway. It can be so minor, right? Expressing gratitude, expressing affection, and expressing respect. Words need to come out of your mouth. It needs to be said. People don't know that they feel respected or understood or appreciated. And often when we're in the family kind of dynamic of managing children and all the things that go along with managing a household, those things start to fall off, right? You'll create a positive perspective in your relationship by doing this that will buffer when those negative comments are coming or when those negative feelings are coming, right? And again, this is a double-edged positive sword in this way, in that when you start looking for what you can appreciate, what you can say thank you for, what you do respect about your partner, the more positive you start feeling about that and looking for it and saying it out loud, the less likely you'll feel about expressing the opposite or those negative things. Right? There's that magic ratio of those positive to negative interactions that you want to work towards. Right? And that means that your emotional bank account, it fills it up. It fills up your emotional bank account when you're saying and when someone's hearing more things they're grateful for and that they're appreciating. Right? So it could, here's a good example, right? You forgot to load the dishwasher again? Ah, right? You're so lazy. Why do you never do that? Oh, right? That's what contempt sounds like, right? Well, how do we change that? What's the antidote to that? I understand that you've been busy lately. Could you please remember to load the dishwasher when I work late? I really appreciate it. It makes all the difference. I feel so much better when I come home and the dishwasher is unloaded, right? So here it's expressing understanding right off the bat. In this example, the partner showing how that they know that the lack of cleanliness isn't out of laziness of their partner, out of some character flaw, or not done intentionally out of malice. So they're not making a remark about their partner's like sense of blame and the horrible human being their partner is because they didn't do the dishes, right? Instead, it's a respectful request and it ends with a statement of appreciation. So if you know you are responsible for inserting some contempt into your relationship, on your piece of paper right now, I want you to write next to it is doing the 5-to-1 ratio. That's your antidote. Saying more positive statements, more gratitude, more appreciation, more respect out of your mouth, saying them out loud to your partner. That's your challenge for this week and moving forward. All right, the next one, defensiveness, right? Is this one of yours? If it is, let's talk about how you can skillfully get around this one when it comes up in you, right? Defensiveness, again, a way of blaming your partner. You're saying that it's not your problem, it's theirs, right? So if you take responsibility for some part of the conflict, any part, it doesn't mean that you are saying it's your fault. It doesn't mean you have to apologize for something you didn't do, right? It's preventing a conflict from escalating, right? And then you can work towards some sort of compromise. So what's a good example of how to combat defensiveness when you're taking responsibility, especially when it's something you feel like isn't actually wrong? So for example, a comment I hear a lot from especially the firefighters that I work with is their spouse is typically saying something like, you're never around. We don't know when we can depend on you. Sometimes you have to get up at the at a moment's notice. You're always at work, right? And sometimes the response I hear is, yeah, well, don't you think I'd like to be home? But what am I supposed to do? Like, I'm a firefighter. I have to go when the tones go off. I have to be at work, you know? And so that's an example of defensiveness. But how do you combat that? You would say something like, you know, I know it's so hard that I'm not around as much, and I'm sorry that I'm not around as much as you need me. Right? That's taking responsibility for not being around. You're not saying it's bad or right or wrong or that you're going to do anything about it, but you are responsibly taking ownership of your role. I know it's so hard to be a spouse of a firefighter, right? Saying something like that. And I recognize that you make a lot of sacrifices so that I can do this job that I love so much. That's an example of yielding to win the argument, right? It doesn't mean you're bad and wrong. It doesn't mean that you're losing, but it does mean that you're taking responsibility for some part of what's happening or what your contribution is to the discord in some way. So if you know defensiveness is one of the things you do, please write down next to it, take responsibility for some part of this conflict. And you really have to genuinely and honestly say it. Not, I know, but, or I know I'm always at the fire department, but, right? That's, but is going to completely negate anything you said before that but statement. And the last one is stonewalling, right? Stonewalling is when you're withdrawing from a conflict and no longer really responding, right? It usually is happening when people are feeling overwhelmed, flooded, stressed out. So you react to shut down, and people often do this as a means to protect, right? That's what I often hear with the people that I work with, that well, if I don't walk away and shut down, I'm going to blow up and explode and say something I don't want to. And so, yes, that's good. Stop, close your mouth, give yourself a timeout, right? And because that fight or flight response that's going on in your body, it's shutting down your ability to think clearly, to hear the other person, right? So you do really want to interrupt that process. So when you're stonewalling, one of the best things you can do is to distract yourself. Say, I've got to step away for the next half an hour because I care about this issue so much, and because I care about our relationship so much, I want to take care of me, and I will be back at this time, and we can pick up this conversation at this time. And then you have to go do something to soothe yourself, right? Sometimes it could be just reading a magazine for half an hour, right? That's what some of the Gottman's research showed, is that when they looked at couples over time and they were looking at them in these argument periods, 15 minutes of an argument, they would interrupt them and say, oh, excuse, the researchers would come in and say, oh, excuse us, we have to adjust this equipment right now. I'm sorry, I know we're in the middle of something, but with this, you know, this equipment is really important to adjust right now. And what they did, they said, please, you know, while we're doing these adjustments in the lab, don't talk, just, you know, here's some magazines, everyone just sit by and we'll let you know when we're ready again. And what they noticed when they called them back, their heart rates had significantly lowered. Their interaction was actually much more positive and productive. So what was going on in that half an hour during this research study, right? Each partner, without even knowing it, was physiologically soothing themselves by, number one, not continuing to talk. You know, you've got to stop yourself when you're doing that verbal diarrhea, right? And just like, oh, I'm going to teach them something and I'm going to say everything I need to because I'm just being honest. No, honesty is great if it's effective, right? But in that half hour, they calmed down. And once they felt calm, they were able to return to the discussion in a respectful and rational way, right? So you've got to get really good at knowing when you've hit your limit, when you're now engaging in this stonewalling, they're shutting down, right? And you have to say, I care more about us than making the situation worse. I'm taking a break and I'll be back, right? So it even might be interrupting your partner. So honey, I'm sorry, I've got to interrupt you. I'm really overwhelmed and I need to take a break. Can you give me 20 minutes and then we can talk? Or let me just go walk the dog and then I'll be back and maybe we can talk after the kids go to bed, right? If you don't take a break, you'll find yourself either stonewalling or bottling up all the emotions. And when we bottle things up, eventually those eke out. We explode, or, you know, it gets worse. It gets worse. It doesn't go anywhere good. So breaks should at least be 20 minutes, because what the research shows is that physiologically it takes that long to counteract that amped up feeling. And it's crucial during those times that you're not stewing, what my mom called stewing, on what the issue, right? Oh, I don't have to take this crap anymore. I can't believe she said this. And what about all the times that blah, blah, blah? Like, that's not the kind of thinking you want to do. You need to spend time doing something completely distracting, listening to music, moving your body, reading. It doesn't really matter so much what the activity is, as long as it helps you calm down and it's not drinking. So if stonewalling is your thing, on your piece of paper right there, I want you to write next to it, soothing and relaxing breaks, taking breaks, right? And you can use words like, we're getting off track here, and I've got to go do something about it before we dig ourselves deeper in here. And I know sometimes it's hard to get out of fights and you physically need to remove yourself. And that's just something you need to do because you care more about the actual outcome, which is having a healthy marriage, than you do about needing to get your point across or win the argument. Okay, so now we've gone through the predictors of divorce, we've gone through the four horsemen, and you have some tips and tricks for how to reverse the four horsemen in your relationship. So I want you to pick it. If you've got all these things going on in your relationship, don't fret. It is possible to turn things around, but I want you to start picking at least two antidotes to start implementing this week and noticing what you're doing and what you can do differently. So I know this is one of the biggest topics, and there's been a lot of information covered in this module. So if you're feeling overwhelmed, don't fret. It'll be okay. Pick one or two small things that you can start implementing in your relationship right now, starting today, and let's get at it. I'll see you in the next module.